This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 63 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Say it with me. Thanks for tuning in. For whatever reason, hearing a bad take is always worse than reading a bad take. When you read a bad take, you just sort of internalize it and move on. When you hear it, you sort of cringe. Last week on my Start Sit show, I started things off by talking about how I didn't understand why people were excited about Adrian Peterson in Arizona. I said, and I quote, "Sure, Adrian Peterson is Adrian Peterson and he could perform. But literally every context clue says Adrian Peterson probably won't thrive in Arizona." Wow. I don't always get things wrong, but when I do, I get them really wrong. Adrian Peterson did work this week. He did something I didn't expect him to do in any remaining game in his career. And with new information, my opinion, our opinions, should change. And mine has. Adrian Peterson went from a guy that I was only spending a small fraction of my FOB on to one who now has fantasy value. Especially in a fantasy football world where everyone is injured. Now, don't get me wrong, as is usually the case, I think there's a slight overreaction with what's going on with Adrian Peterson. This always happens, though. I want to live in the gray area because I think that's where most football takes should live. But it's so hard to when there's a force from people who want you to have a black or white take on a situation. I don't have that for AP. But I have information and thoughts, and I'll get to that in a second. First, I want to talk to you about FanDuel's Scout app. The start of the NBA season is here, and I know that a lot of you guys love the NBA, and it's time to get on the ball with FanDuel's Scout. The free app gives up-to-the-minute injury notifications, player analysis, and game time updates, so your starting lineup isn't filled with injured bench riders. Plus, Scout has advanced analytics and game previews powered by NumberFire, making every lineup decision you make an informed one. Download the app now and get started. Alright, let's dig into these transactions. Hold or sell Adrian Peterson. Look guys, Adrian Peterson's week 6 performance was very legit. He ended up seeing 74% of Arizona snaps, he carried the ball on 26 of a possible 29 running back carries in the offense, and he had a success rate, or the percentage of positive expected points runs by NumberFire's net expected points metric, of 50%. That's a great success rate. He looked like the 2012 version of Adrian Peterson. My goal here is to not have take lock. Just because I didn't like Adrian Peterson last week doesn't mean that I shouldn't like Adrian Peterson this week. It's irrelevant, but I want to put all of this into context. I don't want you guys to think that there's any bias here. I don't care if I'm wrong. I'm just trying to help. I'm trying to give this situation some context. Let's look at what happened in that week 6 contest. The Buccaneers, who have been banged up on the defensive side of the ball all season long, were without linebacker Kwon Alexander. He missed the game against Arizona. And so did Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston was knocked out of the contest with just a little over 9 minutes to go in the first quarter. The Cardinals were going up against Ryan Fitzpatrick for the majority of this game. And that allowed for a nice positive game script for the Cardinals that might not be a lock moving forward. I also want to say this. I think the Cardinals actually matched up really well against the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay struggled to get to the quarterback all season long. They've sacked opposing passers only 6 times this year. On the flip side, only 2 teams have allowed more sacks than Arizona has this season. So you have Arizona, who struggled to protect their quarterback, going up against a defense that cannot get to the quarterback. And then Tampa Bay also struggles defending the slot. That's why Larry Fitzgerald did what he did in week 6. This is also the first time that Adrian Peterson has rushed for more than 67 yards since December of 2015. And it's the first time that he's hit 5 yards per carry in a game since November of that year. I'm not using this to make an end-all argument, but let's just not pretend that Adrian Peterson's Week 6 game was something that's occurred frequently in recent history. Given what we've seen from Adrian Peterson over the last 2 years, there's a chance that Adrian Peterson will struggle to do what he did in Week 6, in Week 7, and in Week 8, and in Week 9. Because we have a larger sample of Adrian Peterson not looking like Adrian Peterson. After all, he's a 32-year-old running back running in the NFL. He ran for over 130 yards against Tampa Bay. That's only the 20th instance where a 32-year-old or older running back has done that. Now, with all this being said, the other side of this is that the Cardinals had offensive line pieces that returned in Week 6. That could help Adrian Peterson produce a bit moving forward. We have to look at things from that side as well. But I think the biggest thing here, aside from whether or not you think Adrian Peterson is going to keep this up or not, or whether you think Adrian Peterson is going to be fantasy relevant, I think the bigger thing is game theory. It's the game theory component. Adrian Peterson might be back. He might be his old self moving forward. That's a possibility. But this is a game of probability, like I always say. There's a window to sell a big name after a big game. Even if things like an upcoming schedule, which looks really, really good for Adrian Peterson and the Cardinals, even if those things look great, selling a big name after a big game is never a bad idea in fantasy football, let alone a big name who's 32 years old, let alone a big name who's coming off a game where there was an insane positive game script, let alone a big name coming off a game against a bad defense. There's been such a strong emphasis on Adrian Peterson's impact in this game. Now, don't get me wrong, I think Adrian Peterson was a big reason that they won the way that they did on Sunday. I think Adrian Peterson played a big role. But all of these other factors still exist. The Buccaneers' defense was banged up. The Buccaneers didn't have Jameis Winston. The Cardinals' offensive line was revamped. Carson Palmer had a great game. You can't just credit Adrian Peterson for allowing Carson Palmer to have a big game. The Tampa Bay secondary allowed Case Keenum to do whatever he wanted against them. The Tampa Bay secondary sucks. That's not just Adrian Peterson. That's a defense problem. And I'm seeing takes out there talking about how Adrian Peterson made Andre Ellington irrelevant. Here's what made Andre Ellington irrelevant. Game flow. The Cardinals destroyed the Buccaneers in that game. They were up 24-0 in the first half. Andre Ellington has two targets and one attempt when his team is leading this season. When his team is trailing, he has 34 targets and 7 rushing attempts. Adrian Peterson didn't take away Andre Ellington's role. It just so happens that the Cardinals keep seeing negative game scripts, and that's why Andre Ellington has been on the field. The instant Arizona sees a negative game script, Adrian Peterson will not be on the field. I can guarantee you that. And that's part of the fear with Adrian Peterson. That's the problem in using a one-game sample to say this guy's going to be an RB1 for the rest of the year. I think Adrian Peterson is going to be relevant. I think he's going to be way more relevant than I thought a week ago. I got that wrong. But I also think given the reaction to this, it's not a bad idea to see what you can get for Adrian Peterson right now. So if you own him, at least try to shop him. See what you can get. But I definitely would not be buying Adrian Peterson right now. At the very least, I would be holding him because the schedule is pretty decent, the offensive line is healthy, and maybe he can continue to be a higher-end RB2 in fantasy football. But again, there are a lot of things that were in his favor in this contest. And the instant they have a negative game script, I'm worried about Adrian Peterson. By Julio Jones. Over the last 6 seasons, a wide receiver has caught a touchdown for every 165 receiving yards. Over Julio Jones's career, he's caught a touchdown for every 199 receiving yards. This year, Julio Jones has 367 receiving yards and 0 touchdowns. So yes, it's true. Julio Jones has always kind of had a touchdown scoring problem. He hasn't been the most efficient touchdown scorer. Even last year, he saw fewer red zone targets than Mohamed Sanu, Tevin Coleman, Devontae Freeman, and he had the same number of red zone targets as Justin Hardy. And things really haven't changed on that end this season either. There have been 128 players in the NFL this year with 3 or more red zone targets, and Julio Jones is not one of those players. Julio Jones has 2 red zone targets. That's completely inexcusable, but it's also part of the reason that Julio Jones has yet to find the end zone this season. But there are some good things happening. In 1 fewer game than most players this year because they have had their bye, Julio Jones has 10 deep ball targets. That's a top 30 number in football. And as I talked about last week, regression should in some way hit this Atlanta Falcons offense. Matt Ryan's gone from a 7.1% touchdown rate last year and everyone screaming regression to a 3.5% touchdown rate. Now he's underproducing. His career rate is 4.5%. Things should turn around slightly for Matt Ryan. And over the next couple of weeks, things aren't bad for Atlanta. They get the Patriots this week, and then they get the Jets the following week. Those are 2 plus matchups for Julio Jones. Talk to the Julio Jones owner. It can't hurt. I do think that he's a decent buy right now. Add Orleans Darkwa. So as surprised as I was to see Adrian Peterson just go absolutely ham on Sunday, I was way more surprised to see Orleans Darkwa go nuts against the Denver Broncos defense. He had 117 yards on 21 carries. Just to give you some context as to how stupid that performance was, heading into week 6, no running back had rushed for more than 54 yards against Denver. And the Broncos have faced Melvin Gordon, LeSean McCoy, and Ezekiel Elliott. And Orleans Darkwa rushes for 117 yards. He ended up with 21 of 31 running back carries for the Giants in the game. But I will say this, he did play only 50% of the team snaps. And that was in a fairly positive game script. So yes, you should be adding him off the waiver wire. You should always add a moderately usable running back off the waiver wire. But in a negative game script, I do fear a bit for Orleans Darkwa. Add Deion Lewis. So Mike Gillisley fumbled in the first quarter of the Patriots contest against the Jets on Sunday, and that allowed Deion Lewis to step in and carry the ball 11 times for the Patriots. He ended up playing 43% of New England snaps compared to Gillisley's 19%, and Lewis has now carried the ball 18 times to Gillisley's 22 over the last 2 weeks, and Deion Lewis has the lone goal line carry between the two players. And it's not as though Mike Gillisley has just vastly outperformed Deion Lewis this season and that things should just flip around next week. Mike Gillisley is not the clear-cut better player in this offense. He has a 39% success rate on the year, and now Deion Lewis has a 43% success rate. And the other thing too, from strictly a per-rush efficiency standpoint, Lewis has a 0.05 rushing net expected points per rush rate. That's not only way above the league's average, but it's far superior to Mike Gillisley's minus 0.19 rate. Deion Lewis has been infinitely more efficient than Mike Gillisley this year. Part of that has to do with fumbling issues, but still, Deion Lewis, in terms of success rate and per rush efficiency, has been way better than Mike Gillisley. If things do turn around, if the Patriots decide to use what I consider the better running back right now, all of a sudden Deion Lewis is kind of fantasy relevant. And he's only owned in 10% of Yahoo leagues. Buy Mark Ingram. So sometimes in fantasy football, you have to buy high. And if you want Mark Ingram, that buy high time is actually right now. I don't think week six's performance was some fluke. Or I should at least say, Ingram might not touch the ball 30 total times again this year in a single game, but his overall market share numbers were not fluky. He saw 4 goal line carries against the Lions in week 6, while teammate Alvin Kamara saw 0. Ingram played 66% of New Orleans snaps, Kamara played 42% of them. Ingram carried the ball 25 times, Kamara carried it 10. It's a split backfield, there's no doubt, but Mark Ingram is the lead dog. Now, I talk about game script all the time, so I should talk about game script in this instance. The Saints jumped to a massive lead in this contest. That means Mark Ingram was going to see the field. But here's the thing. New Orleans' defense is much better, as I talked about last week, than what we've seen in years past. And their upcoming schedule is not that scary. They're 4-point favorites in Green Bay this week, thanks to Aaron Rodgers' injury. And then they'll play at home against Chicago, at home against Tampa Bay, at Buffalo, and at home against Washington. The Saints might be underdogs in only one of those contests moving forward, and that's in Buffalo, and even that is questionable. Fantasy owners inherently, and this includes myself, love to sell players off of big weeks. And Ingram owners might be trying to do the same, because he hasn't been that reliable up to this point. But given his usage, the potential for positive game flow situations, and the Saints' better looking defense, I think that Ingram should be able to give you higher end production over the next 5+ games in fantasy football. Mark Ingram to me is an RB1. Add Juju Smith-Schuster. So there's this Martavis Bryant trade rumor that's going around and everyone's talking about it. Martavis Bryant's girlfriend even said that it's stemming from the fact that he's not seeing the field enough, that the Steelers aren't utilizing him properly. But honestly, that kind of makes sense because Juju Smith-Schuster is playing more than Martavis Bryant is. Over the last 4 weeks, Juju's played 80%, 71%, 82%, and a very nice 69% of Pittsburgh snaps. Martavis Bryant, meanwhile, has played 70%, 63%, 79%, and 52%. You guys don't have the numbers in front of you, but I'll say this. Juju has played more snaps in each game over the last 4 weeks. Martavis Bryant has seen 5 more targets than Smith-Schuster has, but being on the field is the first step to being fantasy relevant. And if for whatever reason the Steelers do decide to pull the trigger and trade Martavis Bryant, if these rumors are true, then all of a sudden you have an incredibly favorable fantasy asset in Juju Smith-Schuster. Sell Will Fuller. I don't understand Will Fuller. He's played 3 games this year. He's seen just a 15.22% target market share in the Texans offense, and he's averaging fewer than 5 targets per game, but he's scored 5 touchdowns. What is happening? He's an obvious regression candidate. We all know that. Through Sunday's games, Fuller ranks first in touchdowns per target among all wide receivers with 10 or more targets. And it's not even close. He's scoring 0.35 touchdowns per target, while the number two player on that list, Bryce Butler, who should be getting more playing time, is scoring 0.18 touchdowns per target. Will Fuller is almost twice as efficient at scoring touchdowns as the second place player on this list. That's insane. I'll say this, if Will Fuller were seeing more than 15% of Houston's targets, I might feel differently about him moving forward. But considering how unsustainable his production's been, I think that he's a clear sell candidate this week. Add Darren McFadden and Alfred Morris. So apparently Ezekiel Elliott's suspension is now in place. I'm not a lawyer. It's been very hard for me to follow this whole situation, but I'm just going by what blurbs and what news items are saying. That means that Alfred Morris and Darren McFadden should be owned in every single league, and that's currently not reflected on major fantasy platforms. Hence the reason I need to talk about this. So you're sitting back and you're listening and you're saying, who should I add? Who do I want? Alfred Morris or Darren McFadden? Who should I be prioritizing? We don't have a definitive answer for this. But with that being said, let's look at the pros and cons for each back. I think for Alfred Morris, the pro is kind of obvious. He's been the backup this season, and he's actually been active on game days. And there's also an interesting quote from offensive coordinator Scott Linehan that came from a September article from the Dallas Morning News. I'm just going to read it to you guys. It says, last week in practice, the Cowboys were getting Alfred Morris ready to start if Elliott had been suspended. Instead, Elliott had his 6-game suspension blocked by an injunction order. And here's the quote by Linehan. It says, we were preparing Alfred before the thing with Zeke came final for the week. He had taken a lot of reps with the first group, to be honest with you, and we felt like he had earned that at that point. So from this September article and from this quote and the way that Scott Linehan was thinking about Alfred Morris in September, Alfred Morris seemed like he was the starter. But here's the downside with Alfred Morris. He's never been a 3-down back. He's never been a pass-catching back at the NFL level. Despite these hefty workloads that he saw in Washington, he never caught more than 17 passes in a single season. And that's where Darren McFadden becomes more intriguing. Because Darren McFadden is a pass-catching back. And there are some reporters who think that Darren McFadden is going to be the guy if the suspension holds. My money is on Alfred Morris at least seeing the majority of the early down work. But I will say that Darren McFadden might end up having the better floor in PPR formats. If they're both on your waiver wire, I would try to snag both and just see if one of them emerges. Add Benny Fowler. So this transaction was originally intended for Chris Ivory, but it sounds like Leonard Fournette was actually cleared to re-enter that game against the Rams, so he should be okay. Emmanuel Sanders was injured during the Broncos Sunday night loss to the Giants, and it didn't look good. He was carted off the field. X-rays were negative, but according to Adam Schefter, he will miss some time. He's not going to play this weekend. That leaves Benny Fowler as the next man up. Fowler played 75% of the team snaps in week 6. He ended the game with 8 targets. So if Sanders misses time, Benny Fowler will be somewhat usable in fantasy football. I say somewhat because I don't really trust this passing offense aside from Demaryius Thomas right now. So don't blow a lot of your fob on Benny Fowler. Buy Adam Thielen. Julio Jones is sitting here like, hey guys, I can't score a touchdown. And then Adam Thielen comes in and he says, hey Julio, hold my beer. Adam Thielen hasn't scored this year either, and his lack of scoring is much more of an anomaly than Julio Jones's. Adam Thielen's not dominating red zone looks, but he does have 5 red zone targets. Again, Julio Jones only has 2. Adam Thielen has 20% of the target market share in the red zone for Minnesota this year. That's a better rate than what Michael Thomas has for the Saints. And quite literally, everything else is going strong for Adam Thielen. He's top 10 in the league in targets, he's top 10 in overall target share, and he's 6th in the NFL in deep ball targets. And given that he's not a big name player, he's not Julio Jones, he might be the better value to buy right now. Add TJ Jones and Kenny Golladay. Did you guys see Golden Tate's touchdown celebration this week? He did the people's elbow and it was amazing. Unfortunately though, he got hurt in the third quarter and he didn't return, and now he might miss a few weeks. That's a very, very big blow to the Lions offense. Tate runs the majority of his snaps from the slot, which won't necessarily help someone like Kenny Golladay. And Kenny Golladay has been injured. So why am I adding Kenny Golladay? I'm adding Kenny Golladay because when a wide receiver gets hurt, those targets are oftentimes just dispersed through the entire offense. But Kenny Golladay, even though he played some slot in college, he is most definitely a perimeter wide receiver for the Lions. So I don't think this is going to help Kenny Golladay all that much, especially because he's been hurt. Sorry, Babytron. But TJ Jones is kind of intriguing. He ended up running 61% of his routes from the slot in week 6, according to Pro Football Focus, when roughly 39% of his routes have come from the slot this season. He looks like he would be the player to naturally play the slot role for Golden Tate. Buy Theo Riddick. But don't forget about Theo Riddick either. He's the Swiss Army knife in that Lions offense, and he also might benefit from Golden Tate's absence. Now, the Lions do have a bye this week, but they face the Steelers in Week 8, where there could be either a decent bit of scoring or a potential negative game script for the Lions. And over the last three Lions losses, Riddick's seen a combined 21 targets. If they choose to use him differently given this Golden Tate injury, that number could look even more favorable. Now guys, before you go sending trade offers for Theo Riddick, do not get me wrong. Don't send worthwhile assets for Theo Riddick. I repeat, do not send worthwhile fantasy football assets for Theo Riddick. Please. The idea here is that Riddick might be rotting on someone else's bench in your fantasy league, and trading for him, especially in a PPR format, is just a simple way to take a chance with this Golden Tate injury. And at the very least, you'll end up with a decent enough flex play in PPR formats. Add Tyrod Taylor. I talked about how bad the Buccaneers defense is earlier in this podcast, and that's who Tyrod Taylor is going to be facing on Sunday. He's going to be in Buffalo against Tampa Bay. The Bucs have now allowed a top 10 quarterback performance in three of their last four games. Somehow Tom Brady was the one quarterback who didn't finish in the top 10, but Thursday Night Football gonna Thursday Night Football. And they have a bottom-ranked secondary according to NumberFire's schedule-adjusted metrics. Even without a strong wide receiving group, Tyrod Taylor is a good streamer off the waiver wire this week. Buy Hunter Henry. Tight end has been a mess in fantasy football all season long, and given this, sometimes you have to make a move to try to find a player at the position who has the potential to give you week in and week out production. And Hunter Henry might be that player. It's true that week 6 saw Hunter Henry skew his production a bit at the end of the game with two big plays. But Hunter Henry now has 15 targets over the last 2 weeks after seeing 10 over his first four contests. And this has been tied directly to the team starting to throw him out on the field more. From weeks 1 through 4, Hunter Henry played at most 61% of the team's snaps in a single game. Over the last 2 weeks, he's played 76% and 83% of the Chargers' snaps. And according to Pro Football Focus, Henry had run just 62 routes, the 33rd most of the position, during the first 4 weeks of the season. Over the last two, he's run 57 routes. That's a 5-route difference when you're talking about the first 4 weeks compared to the last two. And the Chargers' upcoming schedule features really interesting matchups. They get Denver, New England, and Jacksonville. New England's a good matchup for any opposing offensive player, but Denver and Jacksonville both have great cornerback play, and that funnels targets to the tight end position. I really like Hunter Henry this week as a buy. Add the Dolphins defense. So the Dolphins defense hasn't been that bad this year. They've scored 5 or more fantasy points in 3 of their 5 games played, and one of the games where they failed to score 5 fantasy points, they were facing the Saints. They've gotten at least 1 sack in every contest too. But let's not kid ourselves. I'm not talking about the Dolphins defense because the Dolphins defense is good. I'm talking about the Dolphins defense because they're playing the Jets this week. Every defense that's faced the Jets this year has scored at least 5 fantasy points. That's a top 15-ish fantasy defense. And that's included opponents like Oakland, Cleveland, New England. The Jets have not faced good defenses. Miami's at home, they're 3-point favorites, and the game has a 39-point over-under. Things are looking pretty good for them this week. Buy Devin Funchess. The 16th transaction this week that you won't be able to find in my column on NumberFire is to buy Devin Funchess. He didn't really come through this past week against Philadelphia, but Funchess still has a 22% target market share on the year in the offense, and he's seen no fewer than 8 targets in a game since tight end Greg Olsen was injured. Volume is on his side, and that's the most important thing that you want from any position in fantasy football. But the Panthers also have some really nice plus matchups for the passing attack moving forward. They get the Bears next week, followed by the Bucs, Falcons, Dolphins, Jets, and then what could be a high-scoring affair in New Orleans. If an owner is down on Funchess after this past week, send them a trade offer. That's going to do it for this week's show, though, everyone. Thank you again for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And like I've been saying, we're going to be giving out a free NumberFire premium subscription every single month, and we're doing the same for October. All you have to do is go to iTunes, leave a rating and review for this show, and I'll draw a name at random at the end of the month for a free NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB, and if you have questions for this week's mailbag show, feel free to send them to jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you on Thursday with the Start Sit Show.